While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some time from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the Radio News Analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask what's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia, make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the eye.
A very good afternoon, Namibia, and a warm welcome to On the Reading News Analysis right here on your number one talk radio station. I'm your host, Nafa Happy Juju, here to keep you company from now up until 14:30. Now, of course, welcome to the last day of the week, being Friday. Today, of course, is Friday, the 5th of June, of the month of June 2026. And of course, we definitely are moving fast into the pace of the year. Now, of course, this is June, carrying fresh expectations and renewed ambitions and a new set of opportunities for a nation in motion. Now, across Namibia, from Barbers Bay to Rundu, Windhoek to Katima Mulilo, Kathmanshoop to Oshakati, businesses, communities, institutions, and households are setting their focus on what the weeks ahead may bring, what momentum lies weeks ahead of the month of June. Now, the plans discussed this particular month, which is just in between, you know, I always consider June as mid of the year. Now, plans discussed this particular month and the budgets approved and the commitments that are made and the promises that are delivered all begin to face their first real test. And talking about promises, that's what we're going to be looking into today. Now, June is not just another page on the calendar. It is a critical point in the year where momentum must translate into measurable progress. Now, how we measure progress, we always look at the question whether it is making impact to the local communities, to the people on the ground, to whether realities of the people and expectations that were actually set, the pace that was set in the beginning is actually delivered. Now, today we examine the signals shaping Namibia's economic development landscape as the month begins. Now, from investment activity and infrastructure delivery to industrial growth and employment creation, we ask a simple but important question. Where is momentum accelerating? And where are challenges demanding greater attention? Because challenges need attention to actually overcome them. Now, we continue monitoring Namibia's evolving role in regional and global markets. Talking about green industrialization, energy development, logistics expansions, and economic diversification, which remain central themes as the country positions itself for long-term competitiveness in a rapidly changing world. And I had somebody actually say today that they want Namibia to position itself as the best investment hub on the continent of Africa. And I believe that that is very much possible. And I think we're already hitting the ground running. That is not just from investors, from government perspective, but I think individually as well, even small-scale businesses, I think we can really drive innovation and transformation across multiple sectors if we only are consistent and are disciplined. Now, from technology and entrepreneurship to creative industries and emerging enterprises, contributions is becoming increasingly visible. Now, as opportunities evolve, the question remains whether systems, institutions, and policy frameworks are moving with the same urgency and with the same pace. We'll also track governance in action or governance in motion beyond announcements and policy statements. The focus tends to implementation. Want to measure those implementations. Want to look at accountability and measurable outcomes. As projects advance and priorities are activated, we will assess where progress is being achieved and where greater coordination or greater impact or greater stakeholder collaboration may be required. And as always, we remain connected to the realities that are experienced by ordinary Namibians. That because economic indicators, investment figures, and national strategies ultimately matter most when they improve the livelihoods of the Namibian people, when they strengthen communities, and when they create tangible opportunities for people on the ground. Now, of course, This is On the Radar News Analysis. Do stay connected and stay tuned as we bring you developments that are taking place this particular day. Now, of course, today I witnessed the official opening of the Goreangab Mall, situated right in the hearts of Katutura, just outside the skirts of Windhoek, because it's when you go to Goreangab, not the side of outside skirts of Windhoek that you might be thinking of, but when you go to Goreangab, when you pass Vanaheda, you know, most a lot of Namibians are familiar with Vanaheda. Not so many people have crossed over for fear of safety around that community. But when you pass Vanaheda over to Greenwell Matongor, then you head over into Goreangab. You go down further. Now, between Greenwell and Goreangab itself, that's exactly where the mall is positioned, which was a property development that is backed by two companies, being a partnership between Oryx Properties Limited and Southland Property Group. President Netumbona Ndaitwah is within the attendees she's actually the one officially opening the grand opening. It opened already last week, but today it marks a grand official opening of this particular mall, which was developed at the tune of 270 million Namibian dollars, an investment that is right in within the one of Windhoek's vibrant districts, that is being Goreangab, that is now catering to Greenwell community and of course all the surrounding people, Goreangab, Havana. All of them will make use of this facility. Of course, there is ShopRite on the other side, but this particular investment, this particular mall is home to over 40 tenants. That is 40 shops, being among them ShopRite, being the main retail shop, or not retail, but being the main shop that is the mall is anchored by ShopRite and featuring over 40 diverse tenants, that is including Ackermans, Pep, the much loved Pep, we spoke about it yesterday, Clicks, Foschini, Markham's, OK Furniture, Bug and Build, Jet Cash Crusaders, and American Swiss, and of course, not to forget Ledger, Jet. So many different shops, and I've saw also a pharmacy that is set to open very soon. Quite a big mall, a state of the art, I must say. Even the bathrooms are very are facilitated at such a level that it caters for the people. And I proudly myself speak about this mall. Why? Ask me why I actually speak so proudly about this particular mall. When I opened the bedroom windows, the windows of my bedroom, I could see the mall being constructed from the very beginning. I witnessed I don't want to say the workers, but the constructors, the engineers, you know, from the windows of my bedroom, as they were coming together, doing their work. I don't know at which phase, where they were and whatnot, but I witnessed that. I saw that. I had the noise of construction going on. And guess what? All constructed in the space of 1 year and 3 months. That is 15 months. And I must really say this is a statement. Although let me actually try and get his proper number. That is the CEO and the executive director of Onyx Properties, one of the partners that brought this to light. That is Ben Joster. Spoke about how it was actually, yes, it was constructed within 15 months, yet the vision actually came 7 years ago. They stood on that particular land, and apparently some of the people who were also on board with those ideas were even at school at that particular point in time. And of course, 7 years ago, they have finished. Obviously, 7 years is a very long time. And I think that which he said, just that they set ground, or they stood on that particular ground 7 years ago, having just envisioned in their mind at the time on what the development is going to be like, what it's going to be about. And yet 7 years ago now, we were standing on that particular land, that is the Goreangab Mall, which is really a state of the art that is performed at a very high level and a high scale. really the standard of other malls, you know, when you go town, when you talk Maro Mall, not as big, but still the standard, you can see that quality, standard for the people. And I do appreciate what the CEO said, that, the one thing that they pride themselves in is that they make sure that it's what they build for the people is not differentiated in class and community and all that kind of stuff, but that all people should receive the same facility or the same class or the same level of whatever is being produced. It's not just that let's build a wonderful mall in Maro Mall and then Khoria Khab will just do something for the sake of doing. I've seen particular shops, I don't want to mention the name, but maybe the time will come and I would really want to mention the name, where when you come to Clean Ventuk, this particular shop has all the clean things inside of it, and no, you will not find vegetables or fruits that are about to go rotten. But when you go to the outskirts of outside of Windhoek, of town, and you go to Katutra, for instance, you find the shop is not so well maintained. You get some, you know, not so fresh fruits and vegetables that are about to go bad and all that kind of stuff. But topic for another day. Today we shine light on this Khoria Khab Mall that was definitely officially opened today. Now, of course, it marks a transformative moment for the Katutura community and the Namibian retail landscape as the mall opens its doors to the public. And as one of Namibia's most ambitious retail projects, Khoria Khab Mall is designed with a singular purpose, so they say, to bring high quality modern shopping experiences directly to the underserved communities. You know, when we talk about inclusion, these are the things we talk about. And I think I speak about this with so much pride because, hey, I mean, the mall is just right behind my house, you know, which makes life so much easier for many of us. And not just for me. I might be able to afford to go to town, but the next person might not actually be able to afford a taxi to go to town, you know. There are times where really all you have left after shopping, you might not even be left with anything. But if you can walk home, that saves the day. I mean, $15 can also get you, Oros for the kids for school. So if you can save up on that, even better. Now we're talking about young people, the elderly, you know, the middle age. It caters for all of them, the children themselves. You know, sometimes I like to say that it's very needful that we take the children to the shops. You know, some parents cannot really afford that, but now with the mall being brought right into the community, to serve the underserved communities, they can easily walk to the mall and sometimes may not be able to buy anything in the shop, but just to witness and see, you know, that's where some ambitions of young children are actually built, where they think about to say, you know what, maybe when I grow up, I want to be an engineer and construct just a mall like this from the village where, in the village where I come from, you know, because I see how my mom has to travel very long kilometers, perhaps 30 kilometers to go to the shops, and she could never go with me, but I desire that. You just never know what it will birth in many Namibians. So really, it has an economic impact, a high economic impact and sustainability. It is said to have created approximately 700 jobs in total, 340 of which were during the construction phase, and 360 permanent positions now that the mall is operational. And I remember, I think about two or three weeks ago, around about that time, within that vicinity of time, whereby they were looking, the mall retail shops were looking for people to hand in their CVs, and it was catering for the people within the vicinity of where the mall is geographically located. Nonetheless, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. I have yet more interesting news to tell you regarding this newly officially opened mall, that is a Khoria Khab Mall. Stay tuned. We'll take a commercial break.
Hurry to Usaver for mega savings on household items, small electrical appliances, DIY hardware, and motor products. Listen up. Essentials kettle and steam iron, just 149.99 Namibian dollars each. Essentials air fryer for quick meals, just 549.99 Namibian dollars. Bush Baby portable gas stove plate and a 5-piece non-stick cookware set, just 249.99 Namibian dollars each. Usave for luxury you can afford.
Okay. Now, like I was speaking about the mall, reflecting a commitment to the future, Goreahab Mall is an Edge Green certified, ensuring sustainability, and they say it's to ensure sustainability remains at the forefront of its operations. Now, the facility features an innovative integrated public transport hub where taxis conveniently access a dedicated lower level terminal, allowing passengers seamless connectivity to the retail level above and setting a new benchmark for urban mobility in Namibia. Now, of course, they say it's aimed to serve the underserved community, right? Now, another important aspect is to help reduce transport costs or travel costs and seize valuable time for residents of Goreahab and the greater Katutura community. I was doing the math and now the taxi is $15 per person, and times when I would go to the mall and take my children to the mall, we would spend quite a lot because, I mean, when we're talking about kids above 7 years old, everybody has to pay for their seat. And then you take four times 15 Namibian dollars, that's 60 Namibian dollars to go to town with the children and 60 Namibian dollars to come back. So in that particular one trip, in that particular day, if we were going to go to the mall, my kids and I would have to spend 120 Namibian dollars, which now we're saved off if we walk to the mall and perhaps spend it on ice creams as well for the kids, you know, anytime. So it's really something that is significant when it comes to what they aim to achieve. And I can't really vouch to say that is one of the aims which is really being achieved. Now, operating hours of this mall, something that stands out for me. On Mondays, it operates from 9 o'clock to 1800 hours, extending, going 1 hour further from the usual common closing hour for many shops, although we have noticed that Grove Mall and Maro Mall, and also now also Town Mall, have extended their working operations. And on Sundays and public holidays, the shops close at 1400 hours as opposed to closing of 1300 hours. And I think there's another conversation we need to have. I spoke about Ethiopia, which operates even in the evening. You see, the particular hotel where I was, by even late at night, you see cars driving late at night. We're talking about 12 o'clock in 12 o'clock midnight, you know, whereby cars are driving, people are going to work and coming from work, which is something I think Namibia really needs to implement. If we're talking about economic growth, we might need to really extend the working hours or the operational hours of certain retail shops. I mean, look at a radio station, for instance, Eagle FM, operating 24 hours. How about also retail shops catering for people 24 hours? I mean, if a radio station is operating 24 hours and being able to cater for those perhaps who were working at night, you know, between, let's say, look at officers, police officers, security officers, doctors, nurses, you know, people who work those odd hours, if they can do it, and I think other areas, perhaps, let me not say tourism, other areas, you know, can also operate as at odd hours to cater for the Namibian people, and of course to increase, you know, the flow of finances and to increase as well job creation and employment, and reduce significantly the number of unemployed people, because those who be working during the day, they'll be at home resting, and then those who are not working perhaps during the day will be working now during the evening. And you find some people who are flexible, young people who can hold down two jobs. And I think that's why you hear in other countries, somebody says that they have about two jobs or so, and you begin to wonder, how is that even possible? Yes, it's possible if we, you know, fix certain hours, increase the hours. Nonetheless, let's take a caller and take a listen to them. I will get to come and have you listen to CEOs speaking. On the Radio News Analysis, a very good afternoon to you.
Yes, good afternoon. How are you?
Very well, thank you. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good. Man, it's only the problem that maybe my signal is very much that of poor.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but actually also I don't have any ring communication of your radio monitoring what you are having in your studio.
Yeah.
And that's why I don't want to be out of the topics.
Okay. What are you saying?
So what is in the special discussion that we're having?
Okay, so we are talking about, I was actually busy informing you listeners and you now, since unfortunately you're not able to listen, about the opening, the grand official opening of the Gorianghab Mall. I'm not so sure if you're aware.
Yes, I'm not aware because that now, that Comas region, I'm very much far. I left to Comas maybe for almost 7 years ago.
Okay.
But I can speak of Rehab there.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And there's some facility or infrastructure development would be inaugurated, or what you mean about.
There's a big mall that has been up, that has been opened, and it has retail shops of about, or rental shops of about 40 shops. We're talking about ShopRite, we're talking about Ackermans, Pep, Jet, Old Legit. It's Hungry Lion as well. There's quite a lot of shops that have been opened right to serve the underserved community, you know, the community of Greenwell, of Gorianghab itself, and partially also the community of Havana.
Yeah, actually, that's a very much a good move. So if you can look the distance to, from the Katutura, what you call that area you mentioned,
mm-hmm.
to go in some of more like in town and so, and this Bebesia, that's area.
Yeah.
So that's a very much a good advantage to
Indeed.
The people,
mm-hmm.
so that they can at least use that infrastructure, that facility which is opened there. And it will help a lot. So because now some of the products which was not been available to the clients, they can able to meet with. So that's a good move. And that is a development what we need in this country.
Yeah.
And if you can comparing the majority of the people staying in this kind of that former settlement of Havana, Dimo Amambo, Kabira, Ohabodanihare, and so on. No, that's a really a good move. They can only keep the environment very much clean. So littering should be at least condemned to keeping our areas environment so clean. Yeah, that's a very much good really, as according to what I can hear for you. But actually, I didn't ever been reading any kind of any medium newspaper kind of to away. It's just a first time to hear from you. Actually, I was one only to contributing for the other means of unemployment to the youth, and actually.
Mm-hmm.
I can maybe use that for the next week where there's available opportunity.
Okay, so no problem.
Otherwise, I cannot engage with this because it will be out of topic.
Okay, no problem. You're most welcome to call in next time. But just also for your information, this project has created also 700 jobs in total, 340 during the construction phase and 360 permanent positions, so that you can have more information when we're talking about unemployment next time when you call in. But yeah,
it's true. You see, that is what we need really, because if you find the statistics and the code about the unemployment, they said it's 70 or 60%,
44.4%. Yeah.
But
60, let's say 60%, but yeah, 44.4%.
Yes. You see what? We need really to pull up the socks. Not all institutions or align within the ministries and private individual people really to making a better Namibian some of good living. Unemployment to the youth is like, you know, wanampagona kunasha. That is something that if it doesn't have the generations, the youth in within some of a force of living of suitable environment, then that you spoil the nation, because the bed pillars of this country. And each every year the youth, there have been people coming in, and some people immigrate from youth to elders. So actually this is a very much a text for each every individual Namibia. Whenever there's an opportunity coming of job employment, let's take it seriously and so goes forward and on that. So, mm-hmm. and actually to employ others. That's a very much good, really. I'm sorry for, want to ask you something. Mm-hmm. I was want to call your office in order to be updated of some of the program,
mm-hmm.
because I'm used to with you in this program some of the times. So it's okay. A period of time, never been called it like now. I was calling now.
Mm-hmm.
So I want just only to be in. Equipped some of information.
Okay.
So maybe if you can give me the office telephone so okay. that I have to engage.
Okay.
So because I have sometimes my topic contributing to the listener and so on.
No worries. I'll give it to you now. But I also want to ask, you have access to the internet, do you?
Yes, and actually it's only that I didn't tune it nicely, my phone.
Okay.
Yes, I can try it. It's only that, no, insufficient funds and, you know, yes.
Okay.
Position
well,
of,
nonetheless,
financial post-
no yeah. problem. Okay. Let me give you the, telephone, the office telephone number and my number as well. So that,
yes.
Yeah. Okay. So take it down. 083.
Okay. Can you come up again?
083.
083
2888 so that is 38.
Oh, yes, 888. Yes, I can say it like I did.
Mm-hmm. 400.
Can you come again?
400.
400.
Mm-hmm. That'll be the.
Yeah, that's a copy.
Yes. Now that's the office number. Now my contact details. That'll be 081.
Okay, 081
39 81 triple nine. Yeah, then we can talk about what you're interested in talking about.
Yes, yeah, it's very much important sometimes, you know, at least to contribute to the national development.
Absolutely.
Really, I very much appreciate to give you as your number personal. Mm-hmm. That's very much good. I will keep in touch on that. Oh. My name is Saki Dixon, yeah.
Okay. Nice to engage with you, Mr.
Bye.
Saki.
You.
Okay.
Cheers.
Bye. Okay. Now, of course, you might be wondering why I gave him that much needed attention. You know, when somebody says that they have been unable to get hold of us or listen to us, and of course, I take it that some people, where they are, as much as we have made options for the app, that is the Eagle FM app, or via the website, for some people, data might be another constraint, and also some may have the data, but the network may not be so good. So those of you also struggling with that, we will definitely cater for you. Nonetheless, let's pause right here, take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back shortly. Stay tuned.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Simon, don't worry about it.
Warm up with Red Hot Deals at WB. Get 5 kg Best Choice White or Light Brown Sugar for $92.99. 4 kg Cadilla Mixed Chicken Portions for only $194.99. A 250-gram Nestle Hot Chocolate Pouch for $49.99. And 1 liter Clover Ultra UHT Milk for just $21.99. See more month-end specials at furmanbrock.com.
Hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact
Okay, delivering his speech at the grand opening is the founder of Southland Property Group, one of the partnerships that that were in charge of this project. That is Mr. Kali van der Meer.
From outside, this is a phrase that speaks to a sense of belonging, pride and ownership. Today I would like to speak about one thing only, and that's from our side. I've decided in preparation for this that today I only want to speak about gratitude. Where we are standing today and looking at Gorjanchap Mall, it's easy to see the building, the shops and the investment. But behind all this is a long journey made possible by many people who believed in us along the way. And some of you are here today. Firstly, I would like to thank Namibia. Still got a staple in there. 15 years ago, we were given the opportunity to come to Namibia, to invest here, to build and to make this country our home. For that, my family and the entire Southland team will always remain grateful. So thank you, Namibia. Your Excellency, I would also like to thank you and the government of Namibia for continuing to create an environment where investment, business and job opportunities can grow. Projects like this require leadership, stability and confidence in the future of our country. Thank you for that. You know, it's very interesting that we did construct this mall in 15 months. But the interesting part is that it's been 7 years since we first stood on this piece of land. It took us 7 years. At that time, there was no mall, only a dream and a vision of what this place could become. Some of the team members, and this is an actual fact, working on this project were still at school when we first started with the planning. We chose to invest in Gorjanchap because we believe that quality retail does not only belong in traditional commercial nodes. We should go where the people are. Communities grow around places that give people access, dignity, convenience, and opportunity. Our hope is that Gorjanchap Mall becomes the anchor around which this community continues to develop. I want to thank Green Building Construction. I don't see anyone here representing them, the developers of Gorjanchap Waterfront, for their vision in creating this wonderful estate. I would please invite you to have a look at what you see around you. Look at the quality of the services. Look at the quality of the road infrastructure, of the pavements. And there is actually something exceptional that they delivered here. I also want to thank Standard Bank as the financiers, and Oryx Properties as the investors for making this dream possible. This, as far as I'm concerned, is a pure example of funding meeting opportunity. There's a lot of opportunities out there, and Ben and I, and on various platforms, we had discussions. Namibia is in a very interesting phase at this stage. There's the huge expectation on oil and gas and everything coming. But to us in the private sector, it feels like money has never been so tight. It's really an extremely difficult phase that we're going through. But currently it's optimism driving this engine. I would also like to acknowledge the GIPF, the Government Institution Pension Fund. I think it is to be honest in saying that your early belief in Southland helped uplift multiple underserved communities such as this across Namibia. It all started with an investment from the GIPF. To the Southland team, the heart is always greater than the sum of its parts. Every person working at Southland contributed to this project and played a role in bringing it to life. To the teams who will now take over the maintenance of the facility, the real work starts now. This centre must serve the community for many years to come. To the professional team, Conrad Schaefer Architects, the new Namibia Quantity Surveyors, SPM Project Managers, Element Consulting, WCE Consulting, the subcontractors, suppliers, and then especially Armier Construction, the main contractor. Thank you for your commitment, professionalism, hard work throughout this journey. You have proven yourself to be worthy partners. And especially on Armier, they had to suck it up initially. It was a lot of doubt, but guys, you really did well. Thanks. To our tenants, thank you for your loyalty to all the departments across Namibia. Together we continue to create places that support local economies, create employment, and serve communities with dignity. You are our lifeblood. And lastly, to the people of Farihanga and Greater Katatura. Thank you.
You know, it's something that I think we don't talk about often, but I believe we should. You hear Mr. Van der Merwer, speaking about appreciating Namibia itself for having welcomed him and his family some years ago. And that's one thing about Namibia, which I love, and I think a lot of people also would agree with me, is that unity, you know, regardless of skin color, regardless of vicinity, regardless of what, Namibia is a place which welcomes people from all walks of life. I don't know if I have mentioned this before. I had a particular lady from Uganda was coming to visit us, and she said she came from Uganda with an Ethiopian airline, and then I had to separate in Ethiopia. And now when she had to go and board the plane that is coming to Namibia, it is all white people that are going to Namibia, and she was like a little bit confused. Am I going to the right to the right place? Yes, you are. Most definitely, because the country is home to many people, and make sure that everybody feels welcome. Of course, we can't shy away from those that are try and cause disruptions and all that kind of stuff. But honestly speaking, that is the way it ought to be. Because if we go by, no, because of this color, because of this tribe, because of this what, we will restrict the development of our country. You know, there are people who have the heart and the mind, you know, and the idea. Whoever came up with the idea to build a mall that is Khoriakhab Mall, you thumbs up to them. But then, of course, if we go by no certain tribe, only certain class or certain whatsoever, then we will restrict those who have great ideas, who might not be even particularly from Namibia itself, may not be born right here in Namibia. But at the end of the day, it's for the contribution of our country to the and also to the contribution of Namibia's economy. See now how many jobs also have been created because of that. Nonetheless, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. This right here is On the Reader News Analysis. I sure hope that you will patronize the mall, visit it and see, even if it's not necessarily to go shopping, but to see how it has been constructed. I forgot to mention, which I think is very important. Now, the mall serves a vital commercial anchor for the broader Khoriakhab waterfront development. Okay, that's another development which is currently seeing the construction of 2,500 residential units, further cementing the area as a thriving new hub for the capital. For those of you who don't know or who have not been that side, please be informed that there is also the development of standard houses. You know, those have been in construction for probably now 4 years. I'm not so sure, and are continuously being developed as well. That is about 3-bedroom houses, and some people have bought land to construct their own homes, but they have been built. You know, the standard of a sort of just to give you an idea, the standard of a flat, but they are not flats, but rather freestanding houses on their own. Another development that is really significant. Maybe you would want to familiarize yourself with that. Nonetheless, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. This is On the Reader News Analysis. Do stay tuned for more.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Lipura nengelo wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukurile oshafafana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu kwa ndado inawa nune uto otukwetira o special angeza shake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa ninge pata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM onora itatu imwe mbali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile kumderewa nora netatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafilane Eagle FM VI
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Okay, now shortly for economic indicators before we go for news beyond the borders of Namibia. Let's start off with $1, which is equal to 16 Namibian dollars point 27 cents today. And the Australian dollar is equal to 11 Namibian dollars point 62 cents. One United Arab Emirates dirham is equal to 4 Namibian dollars point 43 cents. And £1 sterling is equal to 21 Namibian dollars point 92 cents. And one European euro is trading at 18 Namibian dollars point 94 cents, with one Botswana pula at 1 Namibian dollar and 21 cents. That being said, let's pause right here shortly, make room for a scheduled commercial break. And when we do return, news beyond the borders is definitely coming your way. Stay tuned.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Okay, enough for news beyond the borders of Namibia. SAPS suspends 9 officers linked to Medicare tender process. That is in South Africa.
The South African Police Service has confirmed the suspension of 9 police officers who served as members of the Bid Evaluation Committee to the Medicare 24 tender process. Police spokesperson Athlenda Mate says the affected members have been placed on suspension pending the finalization of disciplinary and related investigations. She says SAPS remains committed to maintaining the highest standards of integrity, transparency, and ethical conduct in all its operations.
titanium, the perfect fit between platinum and silver, complementing our existing benefit options. We always offer a comprehensive healthcare experience. NHP, the premier member-centric medical aid fund. Visit NHP today at nhp.com.na. NHP, we're about you.
You know, food aid programs in South Africa are facing a drop in funding.
Persists, including the closure of the Strait of Hormuz, the ripple effects are being felt around the world.
Already some 6 to 8 weeks ago, we raised alarm that should the crisis continue and the price of energy remain, or the price of oil remain over $100 a barrel until July, some 45 million people will be pushed into hunger. And that's mainly because the correlation between the price of energy and food is so tight in many places. And also that in the poorest countries, people are already spending all their money on food. And hence, when food prices rise, they eat less. And we're now releasing a report that is beginning to show how this is playing out. We remain with that prognosis that is there. Less people are being reached. And so you will see from the reports released that there is a different mix coming together in all the different contexts. But again, just to illustrate that what we warn against is now playing out in real time in many of these contexts.
He mentioned that millions more people were facing acute food insecurity in places like Somalia, where famine conditions are present, and in Afghanistan. While in the Democratic Republic of Congo, the Ebola crisis in the east of the country has been described as a crisis on top of a crisis.
In Ituri province, where the outbreak reportedly started, hundreds of thousands of people are already displaced, and only in the past couple of months we saw additional tens of thousands of people displaced. And it's a place where a million people are also acutely food insecure, and we are just barely meeting the minimum requirements in terms of a response that has been underfunded now for many years, but even more severely so over the past few months. But we are stepping up. We have, of course, a strong presence as WFP in that province and out in the communities. And we are now, if you will, lending that capacity, that presence, that logistics capacity to the health response, working very closely with WHO, with UNICEF, but also with CDC, the government of the DRC, and also local authorities who are really the front line in responding to this.
In Gaza, he explained that they've been able to stabilize the food security situation since the implementation of the ceasefire between Israel and Hamas, but explained further.
Everything and the other sectors are really struggling, partly due to constraints or under the idea of dual use. So, you know, in the shelter sector, in water and sanitation, in healthcare, but also just trying to bring girls and boys back to school, there is not enough progress. I mean, that was also part of phase one in terms of humanitarian support, and we're by far not there. We stand ready to do more in terms of supporting others on logistics, but they need to also have access to bring in their commodities to scale up on those fronts. So while we have managed to some degree stabilize the food situation, life in Gaza remains brutal.
Yemen, Myanmar, Haiti, Cuba, regions of West Africa, among the theaters where the WFP is seeking to meet needs. While Sudan remains a crisis of massive proportions.
The fighting continues and the security risks are very, very high. We have lost several colleagues in Sudan. And here, of course, we would like to see a ceasefire, if not some kind of humanitarian arrangement so that we can operate across front lines. There are many displaced there that are not being accessed at the moment, apart from maybe through creative cash solutions that we do together with local partners. But that's maybe what I would share on Sudan. But I feel a frustration around Sudan because it's a situation where the international community certainly failed to prevent this war.
With over 360 million people at risk of acute hunger in 2026, exacerbated by conflict, climate extremities, and a lack of adequate resources.
We are facing a perfect storm.
Mandla Commission, Jacob is quizzed on a container carrying 541 kilograms.
The Northwest businessman Brian Mokgotsi has been denied bail. Mokgotsi appeared before the Johannesburg Magistrates Court this morning for judgment on his bail application. He was arrested on the 15th of last month on charges of unlawful possession of a firearm and ammunition, discharging a firearm in a built-up area, defeating the ends of justice, and perjury for allegedly staging a hit on his life in Vosloorus, east of Johannesburg, last year. Now, the magistrate, during her ruling, said the residential addresses provided by Mokgotsi were incorrect. And joining us now is SAPC News reporter Patricia Visahi. Patricia, a very good morning to you. Thanks indeed for joining us. Now, the magistrate has denied Mokgotsi bail. Now, in plain terms, what were the decisive reasons the court gave, and just how central was the address verification issue to that ruling?
Well, good morning, Simpiwe, and to our viewers. You'd remember right from the start of this bail application, the issues around his address became quite eminent and the focus point. Of course, there are other issues as well, but the address was the biggest one, with the state really repeatedly saying that with the irregularities around his address, rather, this might lead to him evading a trial. But I want to bring in his lawyer, Makau Sekgatla, and it seems like the discrepancies around Mr. Mokgotsi's address has ultimately cost him the possibility of being released on bail. How do you respond to this, and how did it get so wrong that there are so many discrepancies in his bail application and the address in particular?
Look, the only discrepancy, it's only how these particular numbers follow each other. There's 3 4s, there's 1 5. You understand? So it was just a matter of 4 5 4 4 or 4 5 4. You know, it's something that one can actually make a mistake about. It was an honest mistake. You know, one thing that we know for sure is that there is a pin location. And the magistrate, fully aware of this particular pin location, still was not satisfied with the address. So at this particular moment, we're not satisfied with the decision.
But why did you, as his legal team, not go the extra mile before you actually submitted this address, as you would have known that it was quite vital for him to convince this court that he is not a flight risk, he will not evade trial, and they'll be able to locate him should they look for him?
The address was provided to us in an affidavit by the wife of the applicant in this matter, Mr. Mokgotsi, and she is the one who actually gave us this particular address. And this particular address was also confirmed by Barolong Batsidi. And it is the same address as the one that the wife has already given to us. So I believe we have done enough in actually ensuring that the address is correct. And it is the wife who actually gave us this particular address. And there was nothing more that we could have done.
What's the next step? Are you planning to appeal? What are the other legal options, grounds, perhaps, that you're planning to explore?
The applicant obviously has a right to appeal this particular decision to the High Court. So at this particular moment, we're going to be applying for transcripts, making copies of the charge sheet, the exhibits, so that we can be ready to go to the High Court and actually challenge this particular decision. You must remember that the only reason the bail was denied, it's only in relation to the applicant being a flight risk and this particular issue relating to the address. And we believe that that alone is not sufficient to actually deny bail.
He's supposed to be back on the 12th. Just take us through what will be expected on the 12th.
So on the 12th, we're going to be receiving the copies of of the docket, the disclosure. So the reason for the postponement now is for the state to actually provide disclosure. And then upon disclosure, perhaps there will be some evidence that we can actually use in that particular disclosure for the purpose of this particular case and this particular bail application going forward.
Of course, the issue around the address has cost him his bail application. But do you think that the other serious charges that are linked to the firearm may also have played a role?
No, according to the to the magistrate when she gave a decision. It was only in terms of Section 60, Subsection 4B, which is whether the applicant is a flight risk. That is the only reason why she denied bail. She did not consider any other factors which were placed before the court by the investigating officer in the decision to deny bail.
With the errors that are clearly committed in this part or leg of the trial, the bail application, as his legal team, what confidence can you give that when you appeal, perhaps you will be doing better and you do have a fighting chance here?
Look, we believe that we do have a fighting chance. We believe that a positive address was actually located by the investigating officer, as indicated in the affidavit. And this particular address is where the applicant resides. And this address was actually given to the investigating officer long before the bail application was actually even, long before we even started with the bail application. So it is clear that the applicant was honest with the investigating officer. And we are confident that another court will actually find in our favor.
Right, thank you so much there, Mr. Brown Mukhotsi's lawyer, that is Makau Sikhaja, just taking us through the verdict that was delivered just a while ago by the magistrate, and that is Annelise Tlhapi here at the Johannesburg Magistrate Court, and she really went into detail in terms of giving the judgment summary into the bail application, reading out the affidavits that were before her by both state, of course, the prosecutor and the investigating officer in the matter, and that of Mr. Mukhotsi himself through his legal representatives. But again, the focus point was the address, and you would know that an address, a positive address, is actually the cornerstone. It is very vital for someone to actually qualify for a bail. You would remember as well the state saying that they were looking for him to pay 100,000 rand, while his defense was saying that he can only afford about 10,000. But it seems like the controversies, the discrepancies around his address has compromised his bit in this leg of his legal battle.
In some developing stories, South Africa's anti-migration movement has warned of possible national shutdown.
South Africa is the continent's most industrialized economy. As a result, this country is a magnet for economic migrants searching for better opportunities.
Many enter the country without the proper documentation, while others overstay when their permits expire.
It is definitely a competition for scarce resources, be it economic opportunities, access to healthcare, education, police protection, any of those things that make a society functional. And I think that boils over because suddenly not only is the citizen faced with lack of opportunity, but now suddenly he has a target to blame. Remember that these immigrants lived amongst the local community, established their businesses there, made their presence well known. And so they were obviously in the society. And that obviously creates frustration because you have suddenly somebody to blame. Well, it's not about job creation as much as competition across the board.
The South African government has over the years introduced interventions to deal with the high rates of unemployment. Some analysts say a decrease in unemployment rates would ease the tensions between locals and foreign nationals in the country.
When we talk about anti-migrant, the issue of migration in South Africa, we should also think about also the South Africans. Also, the majority of South Africans are actually very poor, so should realize that. And they're also feeling the pressure that is coming in. It's not like, I don't think that it's really against migrants as such. But what I think personally is simply because they're in a situation where the resources that they have are not even enough for themselves as South Africans, what is allocated to them. And when other migrants come, Now they are coming and also benefit from those few resources that South Africans have. So it's a way of, I think it's a survival war. It's a survival war.
Yolisa Njamela for CGTN in Johannesburg, South Africa.
Meanwhile, DRC Congo's preparations in Europe have been hit by Ebola concerns.
They were singing and dancing in the streets of Kinshasa when DR Congo qualified for their first FIFA World Cup in 52 years. A dramatic extra-time playoff victory over Jamaica meant a place was secured in the biggest tournament ever, the first to include 48 nations. It was a moment of joy for Congolese people dealing with the ongoing conflict and a new outbreak of Ebola, a fatal virus with no cure. But despite the WHO declaring a public health emergency of international concern on May 17, experts say the risk is low for World Cup host nations and visiting fans.
If you're a casual visitor to the World Cup from around the world, I think there's a very low risk that you would be at risk of Ebola. I think it's very, very unlikely. Ebola's never really caused transmission in high-income country settings, and that's because it's not airborne, so you have to have direct contact, normally direct contact with someone who's quite sick.
Joint hosts Canada, Mexico and the USA have banned travellers from affected countries, DRC, Uganda and South Sudan. The DR Congo team plays Cristiano Ronaldo's Portugal on June 17 in Houston, Texas. Then a week later faces Colombia in Mexico near Guadalajara City and Uzbekistan in Atlanta, Georgia on June 28. Fans from the Central African country will be missed in the World Cup stands, but host nations are taking no chances. The players, however, are hoping to raise spirits back home with their performances on the pitch.
Well, it might be the first time in over half a century that DR Congo has qualified for the World Cup, but the players are dreaming big.
What are your hopes for the World Cup?
To win like a World Cup.
Aim big, no?
Yeah, because you need to dream big.
DRC could bring a surprise or two to the World Cup this summer, and some joy to a nation that could really use a bit of that right now. Ken Brown, CGTN, Spain.
Maimuna Tualasan processes locally grown rice in northern Ghana. She says imported rice continues to dominate the market, leaving locally produced rice struggling to compete.
Currently, our main challenge is how to get necessary equipment for the processing.
Rice is one of the main dishes in many households across West Africa. Yet, much of what people eat is imported. The dependence leaves the region vulnerable to global price shocks, supply chain disruptions, and food insecurity. Leaders, policymakers, and industry players gathered in Accra say they want to change that.
Our ambition is clear: to build competitive, inclusive, and sustainable agri-food systems that strengthen food sovereignty, create jobs, and drive shared prosperity while achieving regional rice self-sufficiency by 2035.
Agriculture experts estimate that rice production in West Africa currently meets only about 60% of regional demand. They believe closing that gap could create jobs, reduce import bills, and strengthen food security.
Many of the leaders meeting here in Accra say West Africa already has what it takes to grow more of the rice it consumes. The challenge now is how to bring together the investments and infrastructure needed to help farmers produce more and reduce the region's reliance on imports.
The West African Regional Bloc, ECOWAS, wants to raise $24 billion to support the development of the region's rice value chain.
Clearly, transformational capital means more than money.
It means patient capital that funds irrigation, not just seasonal inputs. It means risk-tolerant capital that invests in storage, milling, logistics, and processing, not just commodity trading. It means strategic regional capital that sees a West African rice economy, not fragmented national markets separated by borders.
As West Africa looks to grow more of its own food, farmers and processors like Memunatu Alhassan say they will be watching closely to see whether the plans unveiled here can deliver lasting change. Nabil Ahmed Rufai, CGTN, Accra, Ghana.
Meanwhile, British startup brings AI-powered indoor farms to kitchen counters.
Inside these compact growing units in London, trays of pea shoots, wheatgrass, and microgreens are thriving under carefully controlled conditions. Developed by British startup Home Harvest, the system is designed to automate the growing process. Users simply insert a seed mat, add water, and let the technology do the rest.
That is so delicious.
Temperature, humidity, lighting, and watering are all managed automatically, creating what the company describes as a miniature indoor farm.
We're on a mission to change the way the world eats by allowing people to grow their own food in their own home in as little as 8 days.
The concept combines hardware, software, and specially designed seed mats. Each mat contains seeds tailored for specific crops, allowing users to grow everything from herbs and seed leaves to nutrient-focused blends. The units are linked to an app that helps manage the growing environment, while also offering recipes and meal suggestions based on what is ready for harvest.
Well, we've created two things. We've created what we call smart farms, that are these incredible units that you put in your home, and they allow you to grow food in an incredibly easy way. They control the temperature, the humidity, the light. All you have to do is add water.
The company says the technology aims to curb food waste and cut long-distance transportation costs. Home Harvest says producing food closer to where it is consumed could help address some of these challenges.
So inside the smart farm, you've got a computer-controlled environment that where we control the temperature, the humidity, and the lighting. Yeah. So in each tray, we put the mat in, and the mats are watered on a regular basis, a multiple number of times each day. We control the temperature depending on the kind of crop you're growing, and some plants like more light than others. So depending on what you're growing, the unit knows what you've put in there, and then it controls the light. And that allows us to deliver incredible speeds of growth and incredible nutritional value without the user having to do anything.
Beyond convenience, the company is also targeting specific nutritional needs. Some seed blends are designed around flavor profiles, while others focus on nutrients linked to children's development, digestive health, and other dietary goals. Nutritionists involved in the project say the idea is to make healthy eating easier and more accessible.
So Home Harvest has really looked to target particular areas and people. And our first one that we've developed is a PowerMat Junior, which we have developed specifically for children. Having worked as a paediatric nutritionist in that space, I used to see people come into clinic all the time with low iron, low calcium, low magnesium. And so we've really looked at how we can get that into children.
Home Harvest's vision is simple. Turn kitchens into miniature farms and consumers into growers. The company is also betting that the future of fresh food may be much closer than the nearest supermarket.
And then West Africa receives major boost to its global trade links.
The giant container vessel, CMA CGM Christophe Colomb, made its inaugural call at the port of Abidjan as part of CMA CGM's New West Africa Express. The 13,800 TEU ship arrived fully loaded, connecting Asian factories directly with West African markets.
This line is connecting the markets of Far East with West Africa, and is, as per our experience in last voyages here, and Abidjan is a very growing market we see, because we are bringing a lot of cargo. We came with a full draft, and this is good for everybody.
The new direct route has slashed transit times by several days.
Avec un service aujourd'hui,
with a direct service today from Asia to Abidjan, the first thing we gain the Prime is a very has competitive launched transit time. Today, from the last port of departure, Colombo to Abidjan, we are talking about 17 days. We have gained more than 9 days. This gives our importers and operators significant logistical competitiveness, as well as strong access to the international market with favorable transit time conditions. This means they will now manage and optimize their inventory better, manage their supply chain better, and of course, accelerate trade flows.
Alay Rahman says the shorter transit time will also help businesses across the region operate more efficiently.
We have given importers access to major industrial routes because we import a significant amount of industrial equipment, manufactured goods, electronic products, and consumer goods. We also want to give our exporters important access to Asian countries. We know very well that Cote d'Ivoire is now among the leading producers of cocoa, cashew nuts, rubber, and cotton. And today, CMA, CGM, is able to provide us exporters with reliable maritime and logistical solutions by connecting Cote d'Ivoire, especially Abidjan, with the same ports as Asia via the West Africa Express service.
From Abidjan, the vessel will continue to Lekki in Nigeria and Kribi in Cameroon. The full round-trip rotation between Asia and West Africa takes nearly 3 months, with much of the trade destined for landlocked Sahel countries. Najma Abdirizak, CGTN.
Vladimir Putin has plunged Russia's economy into the death zone. And this is why.
Big economies can stagger on for a long time.
Problems with the Russian economy
clearly hasn't happened, but we are beginning to detect signs that things are getting awfully tricky for Vladimir Putin. We sent our Moscow correspondent, Ivor Bennett, to St. Petersburg to see the realities of the slowdown. It also happens to be the place where Vladimir Putin is hosting the International Economic Forum, a sort of Russian Davos.
Well, the problems with the Russian economy are pretty glaring when you walk around cities like St. Petersburg, where I am, because of the sheer number of businesses that have gone bust. All over the place, you see shuttered shops. On the main street, there are all these to let signs and empty windows. And it's not just here, it's in Moscow too, other cities around Russia. And how's about this for a statistic? In the first 3 months of this year alone, across the country, more than 200,000 small and medium-sized businesses had to close their doors. It's an astonishing number, and more are expected. And the reason this is happening is because of all the pressures they face. Business owners here have been telling me this week that they have higher costs, they've got high interest rates, they've got lower demand and higher taxes. And that last one has been the real kicker recently. At the start of this year, the government raised VAT and lowered the threshold at which companies have to pay it. And that massively increased the tax bill for several firms and pushed them to the edge, and in some cases over the edge. And the reason the government did this, hiked taxes, was to help pay for the war in Ukraine. It's now well into its fifth year, and it is draining Russia's resources. And the more revenues dwindle, the harder the sums get to add up. And that is why here at Vladimir Putin's flagship annual economic forum, growth is the central theme. The problems in the economy are now impossible to ignore.
And many thanks to Ivor for that. So, plenty to discuss with our military analyst, Professor Michael Clark. Michael, let's just start with that which we've been hearing from Ivor. And it does strike me that there is something of a contradiction going on here. You've got businesses closing, you've got high interest rates, you've got strain across huge parts of the Russian economy. And yet, Russia still able to launch a strike on Ukraine the other day, costing an estimated £400 million. I mean, how can they do that?
Yeah. I mean, during May, last month, they launched more than 7,500 drones at Ukraine, the biggest monthly total. The biggest monthly total before that was about 6,300, something like
big.
That. So their air attacks are building up. The Russians are still able to throw money and people and equipment into this war, even though it isn't doing them a lot of good at the moment, because they're not obviously being successful on the ground. They're actually losing space, or they're gaining a little bit of space, but they're losing more elsewhere as the Ukrainians counterattack them. They can still do it because about 40% of all government spending is now war spending.
Mm-hmm.
And the economy wasn't in great shape before this war began in 2022. So now 40% of it is war spending. And the way that's happened is that, you know, when economies go into a more of an all-out war, which 2022 was, the special military operation really was a mobilization, they do quite well to start with, because the war spending boosts the economy, boosts wages in the armaments industries. IMF figures had them at 3.5%, even up to 4% growth in 2022-23, which surprised everybody.
Mm.
Their growth now on their own estimate is down to half of 1%, and it might actually be lower than that in the event. So when you spend a lot of money on war, you do get the short-term benefits, but you bend the economy out of shape. And the way it's been bent out of shape in particular is that the Russian banks were told by the government that all of their available credit had to go to the arms industries. So as the arms industries geared up to expand their tank production, uh-huh, shells and everything else, they needed cash.
Uh-huh.
And that cash was credit, and the banks gave them credit. But all of the credit available in Russia, in the whole financial system, has gone to the war economy, and none of it virtually is available for the entrepreneurs, the businesses, the startups, so that the economy is starved of credit in the non-war sector. And you can do that for a while,
uh-huh,
and if short, sharp wars, you get a benefit from. But you don't get a benefit from a war that now, from Russia's point of view, has lasted longer from their point of view than the Second World War.
But are we then making a mistake to assume that economic weakness automatically translates into military weakness? I mean, a country can have, because clearly Russia possesses it, a struggling civilian economy while still maintaining.
And of course, this brings us to the conclusion of today's episode of On the Radar News Analysis. Please stay tuned for the Onkonana Dengue program brought to you by Penny Ambeko and Jonas. And from Indafa, happy Juju. It is goodbye. I'll see you again tomorrow at 1900 hours to 2100 hours for life lessons. Goodbye.